Over the course of a wonderful career that has earned him an Academy Award and two Tonys, Kevin Klein has continued to surprise us in a wide variety of roles, whether getting lots of laughs in A Fish Called Wanda, portraying one of Shakespeare's most tragic figures in King Lear, or pulling our heartstrings in Cyrano de Bergerac on the stage. He has definitely, as Newsday said, proved himself to be one of the most talented and versatile American actors of his generation. In his latest movie, Queen to Play, he's doing something even more unusual. He is acting the whole film in French. Queen to Play opens today at the Lincoln Plaza Cinemas and the Angelican. I'm very pleased it has brought Kevin Klein to our show. Hi.
Thank you.
And I understand that you have another film in the works that's going to open up in 2 weeks?
Yes. Robert Redford's film about the conspiracy to assassinate Abraham Lincoln. It's called The Conspirator.
And is Redford directing?
He has directed it, yes.
And what are you playing?
I play Edwin Stanton, Lincoln's Secretary of War.
Ah.
Not a very nice fellow.
I thought you were going to play Dr. Mudd. No?
No. It's a very small part.
Didn't you speak some French in French Kiss?
I did. And in fact, that's where I had my appetite whetted because the studio paid for me to have a 2 months of lessons one-on-one with the a wonderful professor at the Alliance Française here in New York City. And that's where, because I only had a few scenes in French, the rest of the, 99% of the movie was speaking English with a terrible French accent. But working on the film in France for 3.5 months with an all-French crew and having a French coach really brought my French up several notches. But that was a while ago, so this was another occasion to...
Well, this is a lot more ambitious.
Well, yeah.
No, this I'm assuming it's kind of exciting to do something you've never done before.
It is, indeed.
And is it also terrifying?
Yes. Yeah. I remember distinctly thinking, this may be the hardest thing I've ever done because of the very thing that attracted me to it as well. I mean, the exoticness of, and can I act in a foreign language? And what effect does that, what effect does linguistics have or a foreign tongue have on my acting? I hope it makes me different. And I think it did. I felt different doing it, and just the whole context and all the French around me. I felt like at times like a French actor, I think.
Well, Kristen Scott Thomas, of course, switches back and forth.
Yeah.
Is it a good thing to be a little terrified for an actor? Do you look for roles where you'll be taken out of your comfort zone?
Absolutely, yeah. A little terrified is good.
Because after a while you could just be playing the same roles again and again, and that's what Hollywood used to do to actors,
didn't
it?
Yeah, and still does. And that's one way to go, and you can just try to perfect that same character that you're playing over and over. And there's nothing wrong with that. I don't think I'm interesting enough to play the same character over and over. So I think the fear of that drives me to seek different things.
Now, speaking French is difficult for pretty much anyone who isn't born with the language. There are certain sounds that are really hard.
Even the French have problems with it, I find.
Yeah, so was that a problem for you, making yourself perfectly clear?
Yes. To me, my... realizing I was successful when the producer said, we don't need any subtitles. So all the French people understand you perfectly. I'm playing an American who's lived in France for 25 years and speaks fluently. I didn't have to pass myself off as a French person, luckily.
Well, beautiful French, in fact. In the old days, of course, if you had done an Italian film, you just would have moved your lips like Burt Lancaster did in The Leopard.
Exactly.
And people would have thought you spoke Italian fluently, but... here you actually had to deliver all these lines and rather complex French. Did you understand everything you were saying?
Not at first. No, there were some idiomatic expressions I had never encountered. And working on it, I found that there were certain stresses and that I wouldn't expect. I mean, if you're the first time I find her with my chess set and I say, je ne vous pas réveillé au moins, which means, well, at least I didn't wake you up because I bang against the door to wake her as she's falling asleep. And they said, no, you have to stress the vous, the you. I hope I didn't wake you. And I said, but why would I stress the you? There's no one else in the room. I hope I didn't, Because in English, we would not say, I hope it, well, I didn't wake you, at least. Mm-hmm. No, but you can't, I was just sort of gliding over it. So it had to be, you know, je ne vous réveille pas, je ne vous réveille pas au moins.
So it's not just a matter of getting into a role, it's also understanding how a person in a different language would deliver a line. That's got to be really complicated.
Yeah.
And then the character you're playing, Dr. Croak, is quite mysterious. We're never sure what kind of a doctor he is, for example,
no.
why he likes to be alone, which he seems to. Did you have to try to figure all of that out for yourself before you began?
Yes, it was all we talked about it and you know what the backstory was and all that. But really, and it's sort of difficult to follow with the subtitles. The French have no problem with it, but in fact, it's more clear in the original language. Sometimes subtitles oversimplify things. But if you speak French, you'll understand that I've lived there. I'm a retired doctor. I'm a little dangerous because my wife committed suicide, which a lot of Americans don't really get, although it is there, but it's kind of glided over rapidly. And I may have helped her, which is typically French and ambiguous. So I'm a sort of dangerous, mysterious, and the ambiguity is there, but it's a little clearer in French.
And he could also be a little mean. He doesn't suffer fools lightly. Was that fun to play?
Oh yes, yes. He's a malcontent, misanthrope, recluse. Yeah, bit of a curmudgeon. That's always fun.
Did you know when you first read the script that Sandrine Bonnaire would be playing opposite you?
Yes, that came with the package, and that was the big attraction because I'm have been since her first film, A Nos Amours, when she was 16. She's I think, an amazingly gifted actress.
But it also has to be odd when you're playing against somebody speaking in a foreign language. They say that part of the trick of really being a good actor is listening.
Yeah.
But if you're listening to somebody who's saying things you don't understand.
Yeah, I'm just waiting for her to stop talking so I can say my line. No, I had to understand what she was saying and everything. It was a complete sudden immersion into the French ethos of their culture and the way they make films, which is different in some ways.
And here you – well, first of all, let me tell people my guest is Kevin Kline, who's starring in Queen to Play, which opens today at the Lincoln Plaza Cinemas and the Angelica. And you're in a film here that is written by somebody who's a veteran scriptwriter, but this is her first film as a director.
Yes.
So I don't know whether that meant that it was – any different than being with any first-time director? Or is you say the French,
it's
they make movies differently?
Well, yeah. Yeah. There's a different atmosphere on the set. I mean, ultimately, once the camera's rolling, acting is acting. But there's a different approach. There's a lot of the ancillary things that sort of surround the that are in the air when you're working. It's much quieter there. You shake hands with everyone on the crew. You kiss all the women on both cheeks. And then they ignore you the rest of the day. But it was very warm and welcoming, and they couldn't have been nicer and more patient with me.
Well, you know, there's the European side to this story. B.B. Anderson once told me that when she came to America for her first film, it was a Western, and she showed up on location, and everybody was squabbling over the size of their trailer. And her first thought was, if this were a Bergman film, he would have told us to sit in the sun and shut up.
Very good, yes. As well he should. but this was a film that was done for love. We walked from the set back to the hotel for lunch every day. I didn't have a trailer, but I had that beautiful house where the character lived. It was at my disposal.
And this was in Corsica, where the film takes place?
Yeah, it's beautiful. Beautiful Corsica.
Corsica is the island, the French-speaking island
of,
near Sardinia.
Yes.
Is it really just like a part of France?
Yes, but don't tell them that. They, you know, there are separatists there still who are yearning for their liberation. And actually, the French that they speak there is a patois that is unique unto them.
But you didn't have to learn that.
God, no. No, luckily. No.
Sandrine Bonnaire plays a cleaning lady, and that must have been difficult for her because she may be the most beautiful cleaning lady I've ever seen, but she does pull it off.
Yeah.
She becomes obsessed with playing chess. How would you explain the reasons that it becomes so important to her?
Well, that's part of the mystery of it, but I think very accessible when you realize that this woman who is pretty much set in her ways, she has a teenage daughter, a very happy marriage, husband works as a laborer, and she cleans my house, this my character's house, and she also cleans rooms at the hotel. And she just gives her husband a chess set for his birthday, and he's not interested. He's interested in backgammon or whatever he plays at the local cafe. And
dominoes, I think it is.
Is that what it is? But it ain't chess. Mm-hmm. And he's just, sorry, darling, you're on your own here. And she just happens to read the book, and then one thing leads to another, and she finds out that she's fascinated by it and attracted to it and also talented. And so this new passion, this latent gift that she's had all her life but never knew, emerges.
In the film, your character, Dr. Kroger, asks her why she loves chess so much, and she can't come up with an answer. You get the feeling that this has to do with just getting beyond the limitations of her life.
Well, I think when he asks her that, it's her response is, je ne sais pas, I don't know. But she knows she asks him to help her learn to play better. And he's like, why me or why chess? Or no, she doesn't know. But I think by the end, it's very lifelike, I think, that way. She just sort of stumbles upon it but finds out, oh, this is interesting. I never knew I loved this.
My guest is Kevin Kline, who has two films opening. We're talking about Queen to Play, which opens today at Lincoln Plaza Cinemas and the Angelica. And then in 2 weeks on the 15th, the other play, The Conspirator, will be opening the other movie directed by Robert Redford. It's a thriller about the woman who, along with seven men, was charged with conspiring to kill Abraham Lincoln. We'll continue after this. Later on in the show, Howard Jacobson discusses his Man Booker Award-winning novel, The Finkler Question. And in our second hour, this week's Please Explain is all about anger. This is WNYC and WNYC.org. We're back with Kevin Kline, who has two films opening up today. Queen to Play, a French film, which is at the Lincoln Plaza Cinema, and the Angelica. And then on the 15th, a film called The Conspirator, directed by Robert Redford, which is about the woman who, along with seven men, was charged with conspiring to kill Abraham Lincoln. I'm still fascinated by the whole matter of speaking in a foreign language, because we've had a lot of foreign actors and directors come here, and some of them, even though they are really knowledgeable about English, tell me at the beginning that they're uncomfortable because they realize that the subtleties of the language are so important, and they're not always sure that they can handle that. Were you interviewed in France? When the film opened?
Yes, in fact, it was from having done interviews in French on French television, I think, that got me the part. Because over the years, perhaps foolishly encouraged by French journalists, okay, can we do it in French? And I go, oui, pourquoi pas? and I can't understand what they were saying half the time. But as
you
my French is
speak slowly,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, oftentimes they would poser les questions. They would put the question to me in English, but then I would answer in French, and I got better and better. And once I had learned the vocabulary, limited though it was, and as was the topic of which I spoke, which was myself and the film I was promoting. But it's very difficult because the nuance that is the slightest inflection, the same way it is in any language. But when you're trying to be accurate in a foreign language, and I found it very frustrating because of the connotation, the resonance, as I said, the slightest inflection, a stressing, if you overstress, it changes the intrinsic meaning may remain the same, but the sort of resonance of it can alter greatly.
I've always been amazed by how some actors can do a part phonetically without even knowing what the language is and yet make their character perfectly convincing. Mm. I guess that's what good acting is all about.
Yeah, if you look like you know what you're saying, even though you don't, that's acting.
In this film, we have scenes where you and Sandrine are seated across a chessboard for long stretches and you don't say a word. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of silence, and the acting is all in the expressions.
Oui, as we say in French. Yes. Well,
is that challenging? Of course, no, in the early days of film, everything was silent, and you had to be expressive through body and eyes. And
but so much of film is, I mean, it's really, it would be very difficult on stage to do it with looks, but because the camera is where it is in film, you can communicate quite a bit without ever speaking. And one of the great attractions of this film for me was the fact that it's a love story, but a very particular love story. It is unique unto itself because it doesn't have the conventional markings of a cinematic love story.
Well, we don't want to give away too much, no. But we do wonder whether this couple is ever going to become a couple.
Yeah.
Because they connect so much ultimately through the playing of chess. Although it's interesting, we don't see many of the moves. Rather, we see them. Mm-hmm. And Sandrine Bonnaire is such a fantastic actress. There are times when you feel like you actually can read her mind,
exactly,
even though she's not talking.
Exactly. And the palette, the canvas and the palette, if you will, that she chooses is so minimalist in a way. So that just the raising of an eyebrow a little bit becomes this momentous event when she plays chess and starts winning, for instance.
Well, we've talked about you acting in a foreign language. What about chess? Are you a good chess player?
I got better, certainly, learning with a master for the film. And I can now predict about 7 or 8 moves ahead.
Oh, that's pretty good.
I can see that I'm going to lose much earlier now than before.
Well, did you actually have to memorize the chess moves in the movie?
All the games, even though ultimately they weren't used, because I think visually a chess match is not. Psychologically, it's a battleground, which makes it a wonderful place for two people to connect in whatever way. But visually, it's not like football to watch. Each game was, we had to memorize each move. And some of them were sort of famous games historically.
Oh, really?
Not that you'd notice.
But you also have to get the rhythm right, don't you?
Oh, yes. Not only did we have to memorize the moves, but there are ways that, for my character, who had to be much more experienced, he's not a chess master, but he's really good at it. And someone who's really good at it, who has competed, there's certain ways you hold when you take another. You know, you don't do it with two hands. There's a way of, you know, do you move into the space? Do you shove the bishop out of the, and then pick it? No. You have to pick it up a certain way. And the chess master showed me these amazing sort of almost prestidigitational moves you can do. And psychologically, there's a way to kind of clomp down on time and sort of click as you take the pawn with your knight, and you can kind of smash down on it and pick it up in one sort of fell swoop. It's interesting.
Dr. Kroger says at one point in the film, when you take a risk, you may lose. When you don't take a risk, you always lose. And I love that line because I think you can apply it to pretty much anything. I don't know whether you've thought about that as an actor, because many actors don't take risks. But looking over the course of your career, it's obvious that you've pushed yourself. What about the first risk? You studied classical piano, didn't you? Mm-hmm. Was it a risk to give all of that up and go into acting?
No, that was a dead end that I could see several moves ahead on that. I was not good enough to. I realized when I was in music school at university that this was not. And also, I had tried acting. I took an acting class. I got a little part in a Shakespeare play, and suddenly I was hooked. And even though I was not particularly gifted, it was certainly more fun and much less solitude involved. I mean, locking yourself in a practice room for hours at a time was not exactly a collaborative.
Although when people hear you play, they're always surprised at how good you are.
Well, I'm good for an actor. A pianist would say, yeah, good. Stick to the acting. I mean, don't quit your day job. But it's like when singers or athletes suddenly act in a movie. And go, hey, they're a good actor. Yeah, for a singer.
And it would also be helpful if you were playing a musician in a film, because
it's coming
they don't
handy.
Have to cut away and show somebody else's hands.
Precisely.
But you started with Shakespeare, and in England, actors usually start on the stage with Shakespeare, but we don't see that too much in this country. But is that the reason you've been in so many Shakespeare plays? Richard III, Much Ado About Nothing, Henry V, King Lear, Hamlet, which you also directed.
The second time I did it, yeah.
And you did the two parts of Henry IV.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any Shakespeare plays that you would like to do sometime?
The list is getting shorter as I get older. I think Romeo is past me now. there's still a couple out there.
And the other one is Chekhov. You have done a lot of Chekhov, including even some of the more obscure plays like Platonov.
Ivanov, which was his first play, which he wrote in 2 weeks, which was a disaster when it was first performed. But luckily, it was beautifully adapted by David Hare and made quite accessible. And it's a wonderful play. I think I fell in love with Chekhov and Shakespeare as I studied them in drama school. And just got hooked. And having the association with the acting company that John Houseman had formed out of it, which is still going strong. They have a season coming up around April 9th right here in New York. It's this repertory company where we toured all over the country playing four or five classic plays in rep.
Who else was in the company?
Oh, Patti LuPone, David Ogden Stiers, David Schramm. And a lot of people whose names you wouldn't know, but I think once I had a taste for it, I just couldn't get enough.
And then it took you a long time to get into films. I mean, I was surprised when I realized that your very first film was opposite Meryl Streep in Alan J. Pakula's Sophie's Choice.
That's right.
How much theater had you done by then?
I'd been acting professionally, including the acting company, which was 4 years, about 10 years at that point, and was pretty much resolved that this would be my career. I thought, well, I think the movies are not knocking down my door to drag me into their world. And then Alan Pakula, God love him and God rest his soul, he...
great director.
Yeah.
And it's a tragic death, too.
Tragic death. Just ridiculous. Fluke, random, bizarre, but a lovely man whom we all miss terribly. But he had the foresight or imagination to see this theater actor that he had seen in Pirates of Penzance, of all things, play Nathan Landau in Sophie's Choice, and that's how my movie career started.
And for a lot of actors, once that begins, the temptation to just keep on making movies because they are easier in some ways. They pay better.
Mm-hmm.
But you keep on going back to the stage.
Yeah, well, because aside from the two Shakespeare films that I've done, have I done two? Well, three, including the Hamlet for PBS. But you don't get it. You don't. There's not the language in film is not the same, and I find that I missed that, the poetry, in a way, and the, well, everything that Shakespeare affords an actor and an audience. And I couldn't get that in film. You get the odd bit of well-written dialogue now and then, but you don't get Shakespeare. I remember, funnily enough, when the script girl would come up to you and say, the line that's written, you're not saying the line exactly. And I got used to saying, well, hey, it's not Shakespeare, okay? I got the gist of it. And then we were shooting Midsummer Night's Dream in Tuscany. And she came up and said, Bottom actually says it like this. And this isn't, oh.
It is Shakespeare. It is Shakespeare.
What is the line exactly? So precision was necessary.
Well, not everybody can handle Shakespeare, but a number of actors have told me that the trick is to simply trust him to say the lines as written, and they always seem to work out.
That's good advice. If you know how to do it. I've always thought you just sort of have to have an ear for it or a knack for it. You don't have to have gone to the Royal Academy or Juilliard or Yale or whatever and been, taught all the rules and stuff, because you end up breaking them anyway. But you do have to have a sort of ear for it. And I think you have to have a tolerance of a certain degree of artifice. In other words, it's not if you're just, I can't say that. I don't talk that way. Well, no one does. No one in Shakespeare's time spoke that way. It's verse for the most part, except for the, prose back passages here and there. But you have to be able to tolerate that artifice.
Have you ever wondered how Shakespeare would react if he came back and he saw some of the productions of his plays, the ones that were there set in fascist Italy or Romania?
Yeah. He may approve. I mean, he was topical. A lot of his jokes and a lot of his references were very of the time, of the moment, in the air, in the wind. He'd probably feel the way I feel, which is, well, yeah, that serves it very well, but only for the first two acts, and the last three acts are complete. It's just idiotic. Why? When it works, fine. But I mean, the one time I directed Shakespeare, I directed it on a bare stage because that's what Shakespeare had. Also, our budget really couldn't afford anything other than, so I thought, well, I'll do it the way Shakespeare did it, in contemporary clothes, which is what he used, and a bare stage.
You've also done a fair amount of comedy.
Mm-hmm.
Do you like the physicality of it?
I've always been a physical actor. I was fairly athletic in my youth, and I have a kinetic kind of, I like physicality. And once you play football and soccer and you learn how to fall, then a pratfall really becomes not a big deal. Sort of fun.
Well, Jason Patrick is falling every night in the championship season down a flight of stairs, headlong, and I gather he has a lot of bruises as a result of that.
Yes.
Because you can still hurt yourself.
You certainly can. What people don't see that stuntmen who fall downstairs is they wear a lot of padding. It's strategically placed where you don't notice it, but you can really hurt yourself.
Now you're from St. Louis, aren't you?
Mm-hmm.
Do you still feel like you're a Midwesterner? You don't smile as much as most Midwesterners I know.
You can't go home again, and you also can't get rid of home. There are times when I've lived in New York for God knows how many years, since 1970, and it still perplexes me and challenges me. And
even though this is most of your life here and in Hollywood.
Yeah, mostly here. I've only gone to Hollywood for 3 months maximum at a time just to make a film. Or I did a play there once for 3 months, but small doses. New York is a world unto itself.
Well, they did give you a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame, so you're there all the time.
In a way,
We've talked about this film, Queen to Play, which is a chess term.
And no, also, it's not.
It isn't.
No,
I just assumed it was.
I think the English person who did the subtitles, who retitled, who gave us the English title, coined it. Because every chess player I've talked to says, I say, is this an expert queen to play? No, don't know, never heard it. It's just like, you know, it's joueuse, which is the female version of the player in the French version.
Well, it opens today at the Lincoln Plaza Cinemas and the Angelica. There's also The Conspirator, which opens in 2 weeks, Robert Redford's play, a film. Do you have anything else in the works?
Oh, I just finished shooting a film that Lawrence Kasdan directed with
You've worked with him a lot.
Five previous films. And this one was with Diane Keaton and Diane Wiest and Richard Jenkins and Elizabeth Moss and a great, great bunch of actors. And it's a comedy that's coming out in the fall, I think.
So what's the ultimate appeal for you there, that you're working with Lawrence Kasdan or you're working with this incredible cast?
Both. Both. I mean, Larry, I love Larry, from The Big Chill to Grand Canyon to French Kiss to, I mean, all sorts of things. And it's always a pleasure. And this is a particular comedy that only he could write. It's not unlike Big Chill in some way.
Well, it's been a big pleasure talking with you. Kevin Kline, Queen to Play opens today at the Lincoln Plaza Cinemas and the Angelica. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me. Pleasure.
Up next, Howard Jacobson discusses his very funny novel, The Finkler Question, winner of the 2010 Man Booker Prize, and a book that explores issues of identity. Geraldine Ferraro made history when she became a vice presidential candidate in 1984. She died recently at the age of 75 from the multiple myeloma that she had battled for many years, 10 years or so. You can hear my 1998 interview with her by going to our show page and clicking on Tributes. This is WNYC and WNYC.org. We're also available as a podcast.